hiring teachers to go in there and do this work for us. The reason is that we want a real person in front of our children, showing them day after day after day what it means to be a Christian, to be an adult. And more than anything, we teach who we are up front. We don't really teach grammar. Well, we do, but we're teaching who we are all the while, and that makes it very serious. Let who you are be a compassionate follower of Jesus. Let who you are be somebody who can say, I'm sorry, someone who owns up to their mistakes. Let who you are be somebody who will work very hard and will apologize and will be happy and all of those things. Be open, vulnerable, and real, but not so open that you are sharing your personal struggles with your youngsters. I have seen and heard of teachers who wanted to connect with their students, and so they told them more than what was appropriate and more than what was necessary. I think it's very important that we are the character, the godly person we need to be, one who is spiritual and who sounds that way, one who prays, and students know it, whether they hear much of it or not, they can tell, and yet have an adult distance from them, even if they are 10th graders and they're struggling with adult life issues or whatever. I stand to be challenged on this, but I have always maintained that a teacher is not the student's counselor or therapist, and they should not cross that line. There's something about roles here that I think are pretty important. And I know that there's a gray area there of how close do you get to that. Sometimes students need encouragement, and it might sound a little bit like a counselor, but if you have a student that's coming to you for a specific personal help, I believe pretty strongly that if you cross into that territory, it's difficult to be their teacher and to be their role model in the classroom up front. So I stand to be corrected on that, but perhaps some of my reason for feeling this strongly this way is because I have seen teachers get tangled with students in ways that messed everything up. This is especially if you're an upper grade teacher, and I'm assuming many of you are in this class, if you're an upper grade teacher and you try to help a 10th grade girl with some personal issue they have, you are really asking for trouble. Because that 10th grade girl is going to read a lot more into the things you're saying than what you're intending, likely. And, yeah. What can you do? Well, you're the role model there, and if you discover that there are issues, there are things that are complicating their lives and making it very difficult for them to do their work or something like that, or to relate with the others, I recommend that you find somebody who's responsible for this child and let them know what you're seeing and let them pick up on that. Somebody who's not their teacher. And also, if they bring things to you, sometimes there's the rare student that just dumps something and you're like, okay. You shouldn't respond like that, of course. You should nod and, I see, I understand. Well, don't look shocked. But at the same time, I have strongly preferred to say I can see that you have a problem here, and do you have anybody else that you could tell about this? Now, just make it pretty clear that you're not going to be setting up regular therapy sessions here just because they told you this. But ask them if they have somebody else. Who else have you told about this, or have you told somebody else? They wouldn't have to tell you who, but have you told anybody else about this? If they haven't, and they really decided that you were a safe person to tell something, don't trash that, because the fact they told you is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But at that point, you should find a way to encourage them. Ask them, do you know of anybody else that you could go tell this? Is there anybody you're comfortable with? Or could I help you find somebody? But make it clear that you're not going to be having session 2 and 3 and 4. But at the same time, don't run away from it, because sometimes it's tricky and it's something that's pretty serious and it's not to be run away from, and they dared tell you because they trusted you or the circumstances were such. So we are that character up front. We're a role model, and we show every one of our students that we accept who they are, even if they have behavioral challenges. I've worked with a student most recently, a seventh grader, who had a lot of behavioral challenges and learning challenges, and the one thing that would trigger him is if he caught on that you didn't like him. Whether that was a classmate or a teacher or any other adult, if he got wind or he decided that he got wind that you didn't like him or you disapproved of him, it would go badly wrong fast. He needed help, right? But still, that was the thing. He could tell if that other classmate didn't like him, and even in seventh grade, he would lash out at them sometimes physically. And if he discovered that a teacher or a faculty member was down on him, was disapproving and critical of him, he would make it impossible. He would just put up a fight, and it would escalate too. So we must somehow find a way to be compassionate and accepting, because sometimes you have a student where that's the thing that keeps things de-escalated and you can make some progress with them. That's an extreme case. We don't have a lot of students like this usually, but they can show up, and we have to learn how to work with that. Have the courage to be vulnerable. Don't try to cover up the fact that you did something silly or you made a funny mistake. Go with it. Laugh at yourself, of all things. We'll talk a little bit about optimism and gratitude then. But own your mistakes. Laugh at them. Dare to show some emotion, but not too much. I say this because I taught teenagers. They don't know exactly what to do with emotion. They don't like somebody that looks like wood because they're suspicious of that, right? They, of course, are practicing the art of looking like wood. That's their whole world, is to look stolid and to hide everything. It's normal. They're navigating. They're figuring out how this works, and they're protecting themselves from getting hurt in the meantime. So they don't like somebody that's wooden or that seems to be hiding behind a strong barrier of some kind. But at the same time, I've not found adolescents that quite know what to do with a teacher that's just way emotional. That's really uncomfortable for them, right? So keep a balance there, but your character, you're a real human being. Don't demonstrate the extremes of your humanity in front of them. They, especially, again, I can't help but think about adolescents because it's all I ever worked with. They want somebody that looks like they're kind of staying steady. They really do want that because they themselves are here in their emotions and there in their emotions and then here in their emotions and they don't even know why. They really like to be around an adult that's pleasant and real but is not just running off into extremes. Students expect their teacher to be the mature person in the classroom. They almost never can frame it that way or say it that way, but it is what they expect. So if you go into the classroom and you act like one of them, that's too bad. It's not what they want. They already have their peers. They already have them. They do not want you to be that way. Students will get confused and they'll say, oh, I like my teacher. He's so much fun. We have a lot of recess and he plays and he gets out there with you so much. He's just like another friend of ours. They might say that, but in the end, they're a little confused. And they actually would like for you to be the mature person in the room. They want that, even though they're telling themselves that they like a teacher that likes to just be all fun and games. They don't actually like that, really. Thinking about our character, we have to be humble in front of them. If our ego is out of hand, forget it. You might as well go get another job somewhere where your ego can take another beating. Because I find that students, especially when they're getting a little bit older and they're learning how to read people and figure people out, if they find a teacher that's got an ego about what they're doing, they will proceed to find a way to challenge that ego. They don't like it. They don't like it. Even while they are working with their own egos. They're working with their own egos, but they don't like to see somebody that has an inflated one. And they will deflate it as fast as possible. And then in that process, they'll really find out whether you have an ego issue or not, because you're going to react to everything pretty significantly. And then they'll go for the next move, and they'll go for the, anyway. Struggle, a character, a teacher with character struggles against his or her own weaknesses. We know what they are. And if our students see us trying to improve our game in some way or the other, trying to run our class better, or trying to do better with something or the other, that goes how many miles? I don't know. They can see what it's like to be a grown-up who owns his or her mistakes and then works on that. And you're teaching them something. That's what adult life is about entirely. So struggling against our own weaknesses doesn't hurt if the students see a little bit of that. But don't spend too much time telling them about your struggle, because that can get too emotional and too personal, and they're not comfortable with that. One could say a lot more about character, but work on your own character. Think back over the day. Was I what I should have been? Was I not what I should have been? What should I be working on? It might be true to say that our central reason for existing, or our central job in our existence here, is to battle against our weaknesses. By God's help, by our own perseverance, to battle against our weaknesses. That's true for any adult. And it is probably the most important thing we do with our life and the most meaningful thing that we do with our life. If we just roll with the easy road, we hate ourselves. We feel worthless, and we know that. We know deep down in that we didn't even try. We know that. And so to show or to demonstrate to students that we are men and women of character, we know that we have weaknesses, and we take them on as best we can, and we apologize for them, and we're working on that. Show them what that looks like. That's a dream teacher, I think, because you, with that character, are in front of young people who are trying to figure out how this works. You're modeling it for them. Compassion. We must love our students. We must. They are a human being, and if they are students who are struggling with the work or with the situation or the setting, then we must love them more. Again, I said this earlier, but if our ego is out of place, then the struggling student is going to be a problem for us. If we can be humble and understanding and compassionate, then we can probably relate to that student much, much better. Do we want our students to learn from us that they can look at a person, judge them, and then decide whether they're worth having anything to do with or not? I hope not. I hope they learn to be grown-ups that are compassionate and open and can give people chances and second chances and third chances. They are not objects. You have this curriculum, you have this amount of material that you're supposed to teach. And if you could do this to machines, it would be very efficient, and you'd get it all done, and it would be on time, and it would work. But you don't have machines, and so with your teaching methods, keep that in mind. These are human beings. You're teaching them something that's factual and technical, but they are a complicated human being. And sometimes, if you have teenagers, sometimes they came to school that morning with more baggage than you can imagine. You do not know what happened at home overnight. You don't know. And here you are. You're all excited about teaching factoring and algebra, and it's not working. And the first thing you think is, oh, they've got a problem, or they don't like me as a teacher, or I'm not doing a good job, or something like that. And it might not have a thing to do with any of those things at all. They have a long face. You never know. And if you get, again, this is the importance of reading your students as you're going along. If you get to pushing around and making a joke out of their long face and things like that, how do you know you're not making light of a student that had a pretty traumatic thing happen overnight or somewhere along the line, or there was something happened that just threw them for a complete loop? This thing of compassion is very important because it's going to keep us from taking advantage of our students' emotional vulnerability. I have probably been guilty of that, and I've seen this happen where teachers do that to keep control of the classroom. And it kind of works. Except it doesn't. You will often get the results you want right now, but you don't know what you're doing to that person. So I think I became a lot more aware of this as the longer I taught, that you can be irritated with what that student's like today. They're not participating, they're moody, they're grumpy, and you can go after that. But you don't know why they are that way, and the chances are that it's serious and you're doing a lot more damage than good. Are there ways to bring that around? If it really seems like a problem, I will kind of go light on them. I'll give them a break. But then follow up, maybe, if it doesn't change, if they don't knock out of it in that first class period, find a time to check in, see, you know, if there's anything you can help them with. What, you know, if there's anything. Don't do it in front of all the rest if you can help it. Because you don't know. You don't know what's going on. We should imagine ourselves in our students' places and acknowledge their struggles. If you can remember what it was like to be in eighth grade, it'll go a long way. That's compassion. You're remembering that, and it helps. Our students should know that we truly care for them, even while we're pushing them to learn, even while we're correcting them, even while we want them to become more responsible and to pick up the trash they stepped over, or whatever the example is. Even while we push them and we encourage them and all that, we really care about them. When it's all over, that's the thing they know. Authority. A dream teacher takes on his authority and works within it without it going to his or her head in any way. Younger and beginning teachers, of course, struggle with this a bit more. They're not much older than their students sometimes. And I will say the difference between somebody who's starting out teaching and somebody who has already had their own children through school is that the older teacher not only has been teaching longer, maybe, but they've lived longer. And they don't have to imagine that they are the adult. They're kind of used to it, and even perhaps a little tired of it. But they're used to it. They have it automatically. The difference between the classroom interaction, the classroom control from my first year to my 21st year was huge. And I think a lot of it was just because after our oldest child is heading for 21, after you're through all that and you've worked with all these teenagers all these years and you're just older, you aren't thinking, are they going to listen to me? You're thinking, how are we going to get it there if it's not there? How are we going to get it there quickly? They are going to listen. They are going to respect me, right? And if they don't, well, this is common. It doesn't throw us for a loop anymore. And I think students feel that. They feel us being comfortable with who we are, and we just look like another dad. That's not a bad thing. Of course, we're a dad that knows a little bit more about grammar and algebra and biology, but still, that's the sense they have when they're working around us. We're comfortable. We don't look like we're needing to work up the courage to address something they did. We're not working up the courage to address something they did. This is old, familiar territory. Teenagers come with the same set of proclivities, and we're used to it, and they don't shock us, and we just step right in and do something low-key about it and move on. I think they can read all this in their subconscious. In other words, they read all those signals that you are giving, that you are comfortable being the person here that's the backstop for all this stuff, and you're going to hurt it in the right way, and you're not there stressing out over it. It's common. It's familiar. You're not also acting like you're surprised with what they did, because truth is, you're not. You've seen a lot of things like this, perhaps. They think they're being clever, and you're thinking, oh, this is getting old now. We can go along with this, address it, and go on. And it makes a world of a difference. I often suggest to younger teachers, if they're struggling with feeling whether they have authority or not, tell yourself that you do. Because you do. You've been given it. You have it already. Now, you can blow it. You can blow the effectiveness of it, true enough. You can make it difficult for yourself, but you have it already. And then on top of that, practice your comfort with that authority and your self-confidence, even if you have to act a little bit at the beginning. Self-talk on it. You're the teacher. You have the authority. You can go ahead and address that issue. It's not some huge bump you have to go over. It's actually what you're expected to do here. And it may even be worth, I've told beginning teachers that if it's useful, imagine what your dad would have done in a situation, and it probably will go a long way. You're 19, and you're working with middle graders, especially if you know this new student's dad, and you know that's a pretty safe thing to say. One quick shortcut is, when you face something in the classroom, 19-year-old, pretend you are your dad. Pretend you are. Think of yourself, what would my dad do, and proceed that way. It'll really be a shortcut to getting you to being a little bit more comfortable with moving ahead and addressing things. I don't know of any 19-year-olds that don't know what their dad would have done with the situation. They do know. They know their dad pretty well. And so all that is to get them to imagine themselves being a little older than they are, and it's quite useful. Authority requires some formal distance between teachers and students, and so you have the authority, but you are not, and you are not their equals at all. You are the adult. Sort of been across that already. It's very important. Wear that authority comfortably. Don't be overbearing with it. Do students like a teacher who is comfortable with their authority and uses it when necessary? Yes, they do. They do not like chaos at all. They think they like the freedom of that, but they do not like it. I don't care what they say. They don't know. They're often saying something different from what they actually want because maybe somebody's listening and they want to put on a certain front. But even 10th graders do not like chaos. They do not like it. And of course, younger students are even more sensitive to that. Discipline, we've been across a lot of that in the communications class, so I won't hit this very much here. But they need to see that you can actually control your emotions when something happened that upsets you. Effective discipline is built on a foundation of love and care and empathy and a relationship that hopefully had been built before the discipline was needed. And acceptance that was built before that. No teaching can happen without a disciplined environment and without addressing things that challenge that order and that discipline. No teaching can happen because the distraction of confusion is too great. They don't know what to expect. They don't know what it is they're allowed to or not allowed to do. It's very important. In all of this, when we need to address something and we are younger and we're not quite as comfortable with this, try to remind yourself that this probably was not only a direct challenge against you. Some of it was just teenage behavior. And some of it was driven by peers. They did this because they wanted to impress others or be accepted by them. But you're the one confronting it, right? Don't assume automatically that you've got a big fight and you need to win this thing. Yes, it would be great to win this thing, whatever that means to you, but be really careful with that because you can set yourself up in a big collision course rather than de-escalating the situation and finding a way to do something about it. And when you go into a disciplinary action and they resist and they're not done, they're still standing up inside and they're boxing, For we men teachers anyway, it can take our ire up and the conflict goes, whew, because we're thinking, the nerve of you, brat. These thoughts come into our, we're not perfect. There are some things that teenagers can say to us that will trigger us, and it's like waving a red flag. If they find out that that works, you have a lot more work on your hand, because then you need to work through those things yet as well. So, discipline, but if they really did something that upset you, they had the nerve to sass back at you or something like that, it can be tempting to say, okay, the end justifies the means, I can use every weapon in my arsenal. And by the way, if you're 30 and your student's 15, you have a massive advantage over them. You could beat them up. psychologically, physically, emotionally, and everything if you decide to. You could shred them. You have it in your power to do it. And some of us are really clever and we can really make up snide remarks and be satirical and things like that. We could just destroy them. We actually could. And we can have this sensation that they had the nerve to do that to me, and I'm going to start pulling for firepower and let them know that that was not... Well, what are you doing? What are you doing? I think it's very, very important to think about these things beforehand, but every time you had a transaction or an interaction about that's disciplinary, you have to think back over it and reevaluate whether you did right there or not. And if you didn't, you need to go back and apologize, even if they sassed at you. Even if they sassed at you. If you let it escalate and you got out of hand, and you go back and apologize for that. And actually apologize for it. Don't say, oh, I'm so sorry, I guess, but you know, you shouldn't have said that to me. No. Just apologize. Just apologize. They will appreciate that enough that they'll go home telling themselves they shouldn't have said that to him. Hopefully. In most cases, that's true. There can be extreme cases where it might be. We don't want our students to obey us out of fear. And again, if you're an intimidating, older man in the classroom, you can get results from fear pretty easily. You can scare them into behaving because they don't want to be hurt by your next snide remark in front of the other classroom. Keep correction positive and private and focused on the problem. The one thing I try to keep in mind in the classroom is I was there and I was not a model student. And I really liked it if the teacher didn't act like I was the worst thing he saw so far this year. I wanted the teacher to give me a chance. I also knew that I should have been corrected for things, and when I was, that made sense, but I didn't want the teacher to make it look like I was just a terrible person for this. And neither do any of our students. They don't want that. And very often they don't deserve it. Learning... A dream teacher is a teacher that is all excited about the subjects he's teaching and is constantly learning new things. Your job is to teach stuff, to teach things, to be interested in what's around us. And teachers who are constantly learning, and they're talking about their learning, and they're talking about the articles they read, and the books they read, and the places they visited, and they bring things along, that's infectious. And you can do a lot to get your students going just by being active yourself. If it's another reading through that lesson text in a boring fashion, handing out an assignment, should they be interested in learning things on their own? Does it look like something that's exciting and worthwhile if you don't seem to be very interested in learning more? They should know that you have a stack this high at home that are must-reads. Not want-to-reads even, but must-reads. They should hear you joking about the fact that, I have a book at home on this and I want to read it so badly, but it didn't happen yet. They should hear you acting that way. Also, they should, maybe there's some theater here. I usually was a lot more excited about my subject than what seemed reasonable. And let them guess what that all means. Is he a little bit, has he taught too long? Well, anyway, whatever that means, but be excited about it and get them going. And the more boring the subject, the more I did this. And it became a joke. They knew that I was just acting up, and I'd get just all excited about something that they were not looking forward to, and they have to kind of grin at themselves. Okay, by hook or by crook, I'm afraid this man's getting us into it. And I think my students soon enough caught on what was happening. What was funny is I had 8, 9, and 10. That's what I taught. And the 8th graders every year, this was kids, adolescents rolling, you know? And it would, of course, be a lot of work. And the more sluggish they were, probably the more animated I became. And you'd see the 9th and 10th graders in the classroom just smirking. This was just funny to watch because they knew what was going on. They had seen this before. So be excited about learning. Use your imagination. Have imagination. Be open to engage in things they brought up. Don't make it look too ridiculous, even though it sort of is. And sometimes let your imagination go, and sometimes chase rabbits into the hedges. They don't mind that too much. Now, if the class never ends, maybe they do, but still. Be open and flexible, and have this stance that you have imagination, you like to use your imagination, you are off. Often saying, imagine if so and so and so, because you want them to think and be imaginative as well. And it can be funny and ridiculous for a little bit too, if you want. It just can't be that all the time, because that becomes nonsense. But it can be for a little bit. That's funny, and then you bring it back. But have an imagination. We need an imagination to teach. We need an imagination to work with students who come from backgrounds that are very different from our own. We need an imagination. We need an imagination to think about what might help that particular student with their particular learning challenge. We might need to also educate ourselves about that, for sure, but we also just need an imagination. We need to be creative, because they respond to that with their own imagination and sometimes their own creativity. And while I had a very sort of guided art curriculum, we did design, it was design-based, we studied design in our art class in the upper grades, to run projects that taught a design concept, but they were free to play with that. You weren't putting wiggly eyes here on this X and coloring that purple and then cutting around it. But my students, of course, did not like the blank sheet of paper for all these exercises, at least not at first. But when I'd get them going, the classroom would become quiet, and they were completely in. How many of you ever saw that zone in an art class when they're being creative? They are in the zone, if you want to think about that theory of being in the zone and a flow. There's a huge theory there. But they are in it. And I love to catch some of the students that thought they hate art in the zone. I just enjoy it myself. I don't say anything because I don't want to break the spell, but they will. You're trusting them to go with their imagination and use some of these things and just get going with it. And there are times in some classes where you have some parameters, but you should cut them loose and then be very careful what your comments are on what they've done. Right? I love that great story of the art student who was coloring something in art class, and the teacher, and it was kind of bizarre, and the teacher asked her, "Well, what is this?" "I'm drawing a picture of God." Right? And the teacher's like, "Nobody knows what God looks like, do they?" "Well, they will in a minute." Right? "They will soon." I just love that story. I think it's great. "They will soon." What are you going to say to that student? Maybe you should smile and say, "Well, perhaps." I wouldn't go into a theology lecture there. So be imaginative, be creative, and give them some space, but of course you need to set the guide rails for that, because it can go off the rails quite quickly. Imagination introduces surprise and excitement in teaching, and it might just be the thing that makes that day interesting for the student. I didn't use the word fun, right? I did not use the word fun. I said interesting for the student. And students like to be engaged, whether they would admit it or not. Patience. I could speak about this for a long time. I'm simply going to say that we all know how much patience we need. It's the challenge of drumming it up. And patience and grace, I think, are the attitudes and the stances that will make a world of a difference. Patience with ourselves. Patience with our situation, because none of us teach or ever taught in a perfect school. It doesn't exist. One thing that can happen fast in a setting like this is for long-term teachers to start swapping stories. And there are some real horror stories out there. Teachers go through some really tough stuff. Do you have enough of patience for those situations? Because it takes a lot of patience with people that don't really seem to deserve it always. They're being broken down people, and we are too in spots. So patience with ourselves, patience with our situation, and patience with the students. Give them enough of time to learn. And also patience with, for upper grade teachers, patience with the weaknesses of adolescents and youth. There are particular weaknesses and tendencies that are unique to that stage of life, and we happen to be teaching them through that stage of life, so take some patience, for sure. Now, our last one, we have a minute. Optimism and gratitude. Imagine what you are training your students to do if you can drum up some optimism and some gratitude when they know that this is not going super well. When they know that there's difficulty, when they know that you are under challenge. Imagine what you are telling students when they know that there is a challenge in the classroom, somebody is challenging the teacher's authority, and he can set that aside, having dealt with it or in the process of dealing with it, and be an optimistic person and be somebody who is still cheerful and has a nice demeanor and or has a joyful demeanor and has gratitude for things. These children are all going to face tough times, every one of them. Some of them have already. You'd be shocked what some of our 15-year-olds have already been through. And if they can see somebody smile, like the old joke, smile with bugs between the teeth. Smile even though the bugs are hitting your face. That teaches them something about resilience. And optimism and gratitude is teaching resilience. Not that we are showing them that somehow if they yank hard enough, they'll pull themselves up by their own boots. But no, a certain gratitude and optimism in the human race, which you can lose if you teach long and you're not paying attention to what's going on in here, you can lose that optimism. But optimism in the human race, as broken down and as messed up as it is, you're there, it's a new day, we're here, we have this wonderful privilege to be here, all of us. Let's find something to be joyful about here and go through it, even though it's probably tough in spots. Teach them resilience. Well, I hope that you all have a wonderful school term this year, and that these are just reminders, things to keep in mind as you struggle to do your work and do your work well and build relationships with your students. The thing to remember, the dream teacher isn't super good at algebra, maybe, or at English. However, our authority does rest a little bit on our knowledge of the field that we're teaching. If we don't know what we're talking about, that can really be a problem. So we do our very best there. But it is our character and our compassion, our patience, our imagination, and our resilience that is really training them for life. And that really is a large part our job description. It's what teachers are supposed to be doing. They are role models for a very diverse group of students. So God bless you all for that.